This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And good morning, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So last night, I had to analyze an NFL football game as both a fan of the team of one of the participants, and also just in general, some analysis of how this game and what this game means for the whole complexion of what the AFC North is. Why? Because the Cleveland Browns on Sunday beat the Baltimore Ravens, and thus the top two teams were 2-2. So last night's winner, while still a struggling football team with its own problems and things that they had to fix, were only one game back of a division and was still very capable of making a run towards a possible win of the division and thus making a playoff run. I don't know if anybody in the division is going to be in a wild card plan, but nevertheless, the Pittsburgh Steelers used the Wildcat and beat the Cincinnati Bengals pretty handedly. So as a Steelers fan, I was watching that with a lot of joy because the Steelers played really well. Defensively, they were fantastic. And I know the Bengals have a lot of problems and they don't look good as much as I liked them when they first started the season and played pretty well in their opening game against Seattle. But nevertheless, a win is a win, and they did it in fine fashion, and they came up with some offensive trickery, and they used different offensive schemes, and Mason Rudolph was very effective, and like I said, the defense was brilliant and fantastic and got to Andy Dalton 8 times. But on the flip side of that, in the analytical side of, okay, how does this all play out? Is this a football team in the Steelers that can right a ship and be competitive enough in this division without Ben Roethlisberger? And I liked what I saw, but I'm very nervous. There are still some things about this football team that I'm not really quite sure are ironed out in terms of playing really good football teams, really good defenses, really good offenses that are going to attack. So we'll break down Monday Night Football's game last night. Also, news and notes from the NFL, including a big decision by the league on Vontaze Burfict and how nobody seems to have an issue with it at all, which is a good sign for the league going forward. We've got a lot to get to, some college football as well, as now it's Tuesday and we're already starting to process as we head into the next weekend where we are in the AP and coaches poll in terms of who's hot, who's not. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 27-3 last night, Monday Night Football. Pittsburgh gets their first win of the season, and the Bengals drop to 0-4. Not a very entertaining game from the standpoint of competitiveness between two 0-3 football teams, but there was a level of desperation. Booger McFarland said it like, I don't know, 10 times last night. At least the guys talked about it like 10 times, it felt like. How, hey, look, these teams are winless. And I know they're trying to sell the game. And they're like, the teams are winless. But boy, with the division, the leaders are only 2-2. This team who wins tonight has a really good chance. All right, yeah, they do, but at the same time, they got to show something, right? I mean, when you have two winless football teams, somebody's going to win, or at least if it doesn't end in a tie, somebody's going to win, but it doesn't mean they've taken the next step. And that's what I was wondering about last night with the Steelers. How much was a piling on of Cincinnati's ineffectiveness did the Steelers have last night in their win against Cincinnati? And when you evaluate the game from what the Steelers did well, how much does that translate into being competitive enough to accomplish what their goal is, right? Every team's goal is to win and get to the Super Bowl. If you evaluated the Steelers last night, you would see a really good defense that blitzed and sacked and got to the quarterback and defended passes really well. You had an offense that was very creative. I mean, they used the Wildcat for crying. Who uses the Wildcat in the NFL anymore? but they utilized it. They were taking advantage of some lapses in Cincinnati's defense. They moved the ball pretty well. Mason Rudolph was very, very effective. I'll get to him in a second. But did you feel like the Steelers were, okay, that's it, they're back, 0-3, and losses against some of the better teams in the NFL? Never forget that. Now, that's one feather in the cap of the Steelers, is that their losses, right, to the Patriots, to San Francisco, and to Seattle, have come against some of the best teams in the NFL right now. Patriots and the 49ers are both unbeaten, and the Seahawks have one loss on the year. So it's not like the Steelers have struggled enough to make you go, oh, they're kind of embarrassing. And the first game against the Patriots was awful. But the last two have been competitive enough, right? A home loss to the Seahawks and a game they should have won in San Francisco and didn't, couldn't close it out. So last night, they figured out some pieces, worked those pieces, got creative. Defensively, they were great. 8 first-round draft picks are on that starting defense. But do you see them? Did you watch them last night? Do you go, okay, this is a team that can compete with Kansas City. This is a team now that could fix things up and be competitive with the Patriots. Not really. No. The two things about Mason Rudolph's game that I really liked last night was, one, he was really effective in his short throws, short to mid-range throws, which, he really was having nearly a perfect game in terms of those kind of throws and those kind of attempts. He also was a lot more mobile than I was led to believe, right? They've been saying he doesn't run very well. He's a pocket passer. He doesn't like to get out of the pocket. And that's fine. That's a style. But there was also a lot of scouting of, well, he doesn't run really well when he does run. But he did get mobile enough to get out of some rushes to make some good throws. Those were great. Those were two really great things. Here's my big problem. They're going to have to trust him to throw the ball downfield. Really downfield. I mean, really downfield. He's got a good arm, but he's not, they didn't open that part of the game up. And I was surprised by that. Like, take a few chances. You were up big. Let's see him air it out a little bit more to get more used to those kind of throws in the NFL. He had some deep balls that went into double coverage and really didn't land anywhere. He did have the one touchdown pass to Diontae Johnson that was, I think, 43 yards. It was a good throw. But, Johnson was open. He broke coverage, and he was open, and he got hit. But Rudolph has got to throw the ball a little bit more downfield. Now, on the flip side, there's Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals. I thought was impressive in week one, and I'm not going to take that away from them. I thought they played the first, two games of the season pretty well. They didn't look good last night at all. They got problems on the offensive line. They got problems on defense. Andy Dalton had enough last night. I mean, he really did. There was one moment he just had enough. Tired of getting sacked, tired of the coverage, tired of the batted balls, all of that nonsense. And you could tell. I mean, it's got to be frustrating. Andy Dalton cannot beat the Steelers. He just can't. It's got to be frustrating to have a career like that, where you're a legit starter in this league. You've been a consistent starter in this league. There's nobody behind you knocking on the door to take your job. It's really not an Andy Dalton problem that the Bengals have had over the years. But Booger McFarland again last night was talking about Dalton, and he goes, yeah, he's been the man in Cincinnati. He's been consistent. He's been their rock. And so he's just praising Andy Dalton. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice and all, but really, what has he done? He's just been a starting quarterback in this league. He hasn't penetrated the division. He hasn't taken the team far. They haven't won a playoff game. So he's had teams around him with some talent. But when they get AJ Green back, they'll be better. But overall, this is a team that's got a lot more problems than Andy Dalton. But Andy Dalton is at the crux of it, in that no matter what the scenarios are in front of him, he just can't seem to beat Pittsburgh enough. You got to win a lot of those divisional games. Right? We talked about it with the AFC East, right? The Patriots are great. The Patriots are awesome. We get that. But if you're the Bills, if you're the Jets, if you're the Dolphins, you got to start winning those games. Figure out a way to win those games every now and then. I mean, Buffalo is 3-30 against the Patriots and Tom Brady. you know, you got to win a few of those games. I know it's hard. It's difficult. Patriots are one of the all-time great teams in the history of the league. But your job is to analyze that and find a team that can at least pop a few victories. Not have a winning record, per se, but pop a few victories. And the Steelers have been just a thorn in the Bengals' side for a long time. Every now and then, Cincinnati will pop up and get a win. But golly, it's now you're dealing with a Ben Roethlisberger-less Steelers than the Cincinnati Bengals can't penetrate that at all. So again, from a fan standpoint, an enjoyable game to watch the Steelers put up a 27-3 victory. Enjoyable because finally they won. Finally things looked good. Finally there's something to cheer for. Analyst-wise, analytical-wise, in terms of what it means for the AFC, I don't think the Steelers pop yet. If they put off a few more victories and look decent enough and Mason Rudolph continues to grow at the position, I'll come back to that. And I won't do it with some fanboy glasses on. I'll actually be, no, there's a legitimate threat here to win the division. But it wasn't yet because can we all agree? The Wildcat's fun, but it's kind of useless, right? As a mechanism. I mean, it worked against Cincinnati. It ain't going to work against anybody else, right? It's one of the reasons it's dead. It was great when the Dolphins used it. It was a great offensive strategy, right? Because it was kind of unique. Your direct snap to the running back was kind of cool. Jalen Samuels, I think, took 8 snaps last night, right? And scored a touchdown on one of them. And the Steelers used it to perfection. They had that jet sweep. Connor would come around at jet sweep, and he'd take off. But you know that teams read that, right? I mean, one of the reasons the Wildcat doesn't work in the NFL, one, it gets snuffed out quickly. Two, when you direct snap to the running back, what do you think they're going to do with the ball? I mean, unless it's Cordell Stewart back there or anybody else that's got a good arm, why are they doing that? They're running the ball. Right, see, it's easy for defenses to sort of dedicate a little bit of effort to stopping that. It can catch you by surprise and all that, but that's if the Steelers are hoping that this creativity in the offense propels them down the road, that's not going to happen. This is a football team that is going to win games if they do win games with a traditional pocket quarterback. That's it. No more jet sweeps, no wildcat, none of that stuff. That stuff is gone by week 7, if that. They're going to win games because Mason Rudolph is going to have to make some throws. Short, mid-range, long. He's going to have to complete them all. He's going to have to really move this football team. Right? The creativity last night was refreshing and awesome, but you know it has a shelf life, and that's the problem. So before we get all really excited about, hey, look, the Steelers look good. The Steelers look bad. They're not quite yet. I need to see a little bit more than a bad beat up Bengals team that was ready to just get off that field as quickly as possible. Now, the Steelers defense, that's coming together great. Devin Bush was fantastic last night. Again, 8 first round draft picks are on that defense. Right? When they got to 0-2 and they traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick, it signaled that they were not ready to quite give up. They were playing really well last night. But again, let's see it down the road. Let's see them close out a game like they did, like they couldn't do against San Francisco the week before. So that's my thoughts on Monday Night Football. We'll get to some more about now that week 4 is all done. We'll have our top 5, bottom 5 later on in this show this morning. But we got to get to Vontaze Burfict and the NFL's decision to ban him for the rest of the season. We'll talk about this and what it means for the league and a different culture next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Colfer, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We're rolling along on a Tuesday morning. Hey, 1 out of 4 batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, so Vontaze Burfict gets suspended for the rest of the season.
Yay!
Here's a little bit of the bad news, and this is just the cynical me coming out. I really hope this doesn't get appealed down like these tend to do, right? You get these suspensions, long, big suspensions that make noise and headlines, and then there's an appeal, because there always is, and the Players Association comes out and goes, oh, well, if you could do it to him, you could do it to any one of us, and we're not going to let that happen. And then there's appeal, and it's like, all right, six games. Girl, I hope that's not the case.
No, this is almost, he needs to go.
This is almost universally like agreed upon. There's like been no debate.
There was no shock. Like
none.
Even when you go to Twitter, like, what? How can he be suspended for a year?
Yep.
Not one person. And the only thing I ever saw was, oh, good. Okay, he's suspended. Now the players union needs to act and get him kicked out of the league.
Exactly. And this is the thing, right? So whenever there's been there's a suspension, I don't care what it's for. Usually it's for PEDs or something like that, right? There's always people who take shots at the NFL, right? For being dictatorial, et cetera, because there's always that larger picture argument, right? Even if the suspension is worthy and necessary, there's still a player side versus owner's league side, right? And people want to, there hasn't been that at all. I have not seen it at all. There seems to be just this overall universal agreement that this is a dirty, awful football player who puts other football players at risk tremendously, and he cannot be allowed to do that anymore. Like, that's just been this universal feeling. And now, so let's see if that can extend just a little bit into Demoris Smith and the Players Union when they have to go and appeal this. And like, can't Demoris Smith go, I represent players. I represent the health of players. He's one of my players, but he also puts my guys at risk, a majority of my guys at risk when he's on the field. Let's see if that actually takes place. But this is a guy that is, he's got to go. He's got to go.
I think as he's going to get older, where he's starting to get a little bit slower, his skill level's not going to be as on par as the rest of the NFL, that he will start taking more cheap shots.
Yeah, I agree completely. I was reading this column this morning about it, and it said, listen, this is how he has learned, and I don't know if it's coaching, I don't know if it's just natural instinct, this is how he has learned to separate himself from all the other linebackers that will take his job. Right. So he becomes this kind of player. And all you've got to do is find a coach that kind of lives in that philosophical world that you do. Well, you want to be a truck and you want to be tough and you want to be physical. And John Gruden's a perfect example of this. And I'm telling you, this is where the league has got to start filtering this stuff away. Because we all know that injuries are bad. We don't like them. We don't celebrate them like we used to. Lord knows. I mean, you don't have to go back far in the history of this league when ESPN would show you Big Hit Sunday, right? You know, they would just show you the hits. There used to be videos that you could buy of the NFL's greatest hits, right? It was constant. It was violence. It was violence that was sold.
You could get like an almost an hour-long video of just one season of NFL hits.
Exactly.
That's how many there were.
That's exactly right. So the NFL for a long time had packaged the violence as something to kind of, you know, enjoy for your entertainment purposes. And now we started to get away from that, where we realized, wait a minute, if we're going to enjoy this league going forward for generations to come, we have to change, and we have to change as a society. We can still enjoy football. We can still enjoy the violence within the football, but we have to do it more responsibly, that we can't see guys getting completely and utterly annihilated in the head and celebrate that. That's bad. We know it has awful ramifications for these guys going forward. And the league had to make a change because they were starting to see a generation that was getting out of the sport and not playing the sport anymore as in youth. And so they said, okay, look, we've got to make this game safer so it does trickle down so that moms will let their kids play. All right. I've been married 21 years. There's been very, very, there's been many, many major debates that my wife and I have had in our marriage, where we were going to live, what job to take, etc. But the one that was absolutely one I'll never forget that went on for days, it involved tears, it involved just a lot of conversation and a lot of in-depth, almost just complete utter arguing at each other, was whether or not my son would play football. He really, really wanted to play football, and my wife was adamant that he didn't. That he wouldn't play. And I finally had to win her over. And I said, oh, don't worry, he won't get a concussion. He got a concussion. He got a busted eardrum and a concussion. Right? And so that was where the league was. The league was losing moms. They were losing kids down the road. They said, wait a minute, we can do this better. We can be safer. We can have innovations that protect players. We can have rule changes that protect players, right? We're never going to take the physical violence out of the sport completely, but we can do our best to sort of mediate it the best we can, right? To manage it the best we can. But here comes Vontaze Burfict from a time where these kind of hits were packaged and sold. And he's got a coach that still believes in those kind of hits as kind of the intimidating, that's football, baby. And he's got a lot of support. John Gruden is a big fan of Vontaze Burfict, a huge fan of Vontaze Burfict, made him a captain on this year's team. So he's being encouraged not to necessarily do this kind of stuff, but to not change his ways by the owner, the organization for which he plays, right? When he's getting escorted off the field and he gets ejected in Indianapolis and he's blowing kisses to the fans, he's not realizing what he's doing to his legacy and his career. He doesn't seem to care. Why? Because this is his legacy. This is who he's about. He's not about clean play. He's not about doing it the right way within the confines of safe football. He's not a Khalil Mack, where Khalil Mack plays the same position, but Khalil Mack never gets fined and never gets suspended and doesn't ever reputation of being a dirty player, and he's the best in the league, right? This is how he has separated himself from that. This is how he has made a name for himself. And the league has to come in and say, we don't need any more of these guys because he's not changing. He's not going to change. But as long as there's a coach out there that still believes in the, man, I just like physical football. I like a guy who just comes in like a Mack truck and just gives it. As long as you have those guys that encourage this, he'll not. Why would he change? We're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, my God. So I hope, I've covered this league a long time. There's still some things that I don't know necessarily how it works. I don't know the appeal process of what will be said, how all this will work, whether it will stand, whether it will be reduced to six. I don't even know if the league has an ability to suspend a player permanently. I kind of hope they do, but I don't know if they even do. So we'll see how this goes, but there's just got to be a universal feeling that this guy's too dirty for the league, and he shouldn't work. He shouldn't work again.
This just might be the closest we've ever been.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, I mean, even when Antonio Brown got released by the Patriots, people were up in arms over it.
Oh, sure.
And there are still people who are in Antonio Brown's camp going, what did he do wrong? Type of thing. And
right,
you're looking at this list like, well, there's this and this and this and this and this. It's a gigantic Bible of things that Antonio Brown has done wrong to put himself in this position.
And yet he still has supporters.
Vontaze Burfict, I haven't heard one person go, well, this is a bad idea. This is wrong. How can the NFL
he's getting railroaded.
Be suspended?
Yep, I agree. Maybe I'm missing them, but there hasn't been a vocal support from any group of people that's saying, "Oh, this guy."
Yeah,
I can't believe the league is like this.
If he's to go away, I don't think he'll be missed.
I don't either. But you got to get this league has to this league has to find a way if they're going to be taking that next step away from the mentality that has fed Vontaze Burfict since his arrival into this league. Oh, heck, forget that. His arrival into college football, because when he was at Arizona State, he did the exact same thing. But he has had, and I hate to say this because I always think guys are their own, their own CEO, if you will, but he has had enablers all the way through of guys who have never really taken him to task on this kind of stuff. Sure, the league will suspend. Sure, the league will fine, but he's always had coaches. Marvin Lewis was one of his biggest supporters too, right? Marvin Lewis said all those things about toughness and blah, 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 blah that you get that the league has got to get away from. because this game is violent enough. And again, that violence is not going away. But the excessive violence that puts another player, we are talking about another union guy that almost lost his head because another union guy almost took it off. So if you're Demoris Smith, stand up for the players that are going to be victims of this guy if he should get back on that field.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we get to top five, bottom five later on in the show today. I don't know about you, and we won't give away ours until the actual segment, but I had trouble with the 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
There's just teams that are just 3-1, and I'm like, all right, who's the better 3-1, or who's looked better? Some of these teams have got some flaws.
You can make arguments for it. Yeah.
No, yeah, I feel a big pile.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so anyway, that's what I was struggling with. So I don't know if I feel good about this Monday Night Football win. I feel good as a fan. I thought it was cool, but kind of, you know, I don't know.
You were probably hoping or wanting to see just sheer dominance on either side of the ball.
Right.
There were times where I felt, I mean, the Steelers' defense performed well. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. But I felt the Bengals helped them out.
That was the big takeaway was, okay, but it's against this very, very bad football team tonight. That is a bad team.
Yeah.
Right? That team looked really bad. And again, sometimes the Steelers, the way you're being defended can put your offense at a point. The way your defense is out of sync can make you look bad. And the other team's ability to put a nice offensive look together can make you look bad. But the Bengals just overall just had a bad look to them last night. But I don't know. This could be, look, the division is certainly not out of reach. I thought if the Ravens had won, I know it would have been just two games, and I get it with a lot of games to play, but if the Ravens had won, there's a momentum boost for Baltimore that I think would have extended, and it would have been hard for the Steelers to catch up. But without playing the Ravens yet, still having to play the Ravens twice, there's still a shot of getting the division, still playing the Browns twice, still a shot at getting the division. You know, somebody's got to win the AFC North. Somebody's got to win it, right? And so if you're 1-3 in a game back, you're right back in the thick of things. And if the Steelers get confident, that's the thing with Mason Rudolph, if there's a confidence level that he starts to develop, I mean, again, he hasn't played bad, right? They just haven't won. He came in a relief effort against Seattle, and the offense actually got ticked up with him being in the lineup, but they just couldn't win that game. Against San Francisco, he played pretty well. Still looked like a first-year starter. I mean, well, it's kind of his second year, but a first start. Still had troubles at times, but didn't look all that bad against the 49ers, but they just couldn't close out the game. Last night, he looked really good. Last night, he was really good. He was 24 of 28, but most of them were short passes. And some of them were practically handing the ball off. I mean, that's how short they were. And he only, 24 passes for 229 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had no picks. He wasn't sacked. It was a pretty good performance. I just want to see him throw the ball downfield a little more. I think it was too conservative from a throwing perspective. I mean, obviously, the trickery doesn't make his offense conservative as a whole. That's pretty unique. That was pretty cool. To get it working, but he's got to throw the ball downfield a little more. I mean, I think he only attempted 3 or 4 passes that were longer than 40 yards, right? And you know what those are? You know what? Have you noticed this in the NFL? You know what those are? Those are becoming the let's see if the pass interference problem fails.
Yep.
Like, that's what I feel like every time I see a quarterback throw these deep balls down the sidelines. I think it's like, let's take a shot and see if we get a flag. Which used to be the case, but now it feels like it could be a really good case we get a flag now.
But that feels like that's the play call.
Right.
It isn't, hey, I'm going to have you go down, 15 yards down the field, catch the ball, and then try to, either get out of bounds or go for a touchdown. It's like, no, go downfield, try to draw the foul, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, it's like basketball.
And with the penalty, with the reviewable and all of that, this could happen, right? This actually can occur. We might be able to get that pass interference now.
Or, maybe it's a situation like, let's throw it deep down the field. Maybe we can get the other team to burn a timeout while they review.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And
if a pass interference is called and it's not, then we get them to burn a timeout. Feels like there's a lot more gamesmanship than what's needed.
And we don't have any idea now what pass interference is. We have no clue.
The only thing we know that is what is a clear and definitive pass interference is last year's NFC Championship game.
Yeah, right.
That's the only one because that wasn't called, and we know that that's pass interference.
That's pass interference.
Other than that, I mean, there's times where I see pass interference and it's called in the offense. I'm like, well, I didn't see that one.
Me too. You're seeing it now more, right? So they haven't really clarified it. They haven't really put some clarity in the situation. And now we're not 100% sure where we're at with all of it. So we shall see. So now that week four is in the books, we can look ahead a little bit to week five. But I think there is, as I said, making top five, bottom five, there just has been this feeling of, okay, we're getting a little bit of separation from some good teams, but not quite, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Kansas City's undefeated, but okay, Detroit took them down to the wire. The Patriots are undefeated, but the Bills defense held Tom Brady to one of the worst statistical games he's had in a while. Okay, I'm not saying that these teams are beatable, anybody can get to them, but there's not a dominant team rolling through
right
now.
You give it to the Patriots as well. It's like, well, you did it without the Bills having their quarterback.
Right, that's true.
So you make an argument there that, what if the Bills had Josh Allen? Maybe they would have won the game.
Yeah, maybe, if you didn't throw all those picks. But still, it just doesn't feel like it's quite a separation. And then you got this middle of the pack where you have a good team like the Packers that, didn't win on Thursday night against Philadelphia at home. And, you win. Or you've got some other teams that have suffered. The Cowboys suffered a loss. Is that a bad loss? Yeah, you got to score more than 10 points.
Right.
Or you should beat a Saints team with Teddy Bridgewater.
Or you can even pinpoint the Saints who had a good win, but, not really.
Yeah, couldn't find the end zone.
And he didn't
find the end zone. I mean, in 2 weeks ago, when he came in for Drew Brees, when Drew Brees got hurt against the Rams, he couldn't find the end zone there either. I know he beat the Seahawks on the road, but they're not scoring a lot of touchdowns with Teddy Bridgewater. He did have two against the Seahawks, but there's these caveats to these teams where you go, all right, are they good? Are they great? Are they just better than good? Where are we at? Because each team has got a little bit of a flaw to them. The Rams, right? You give up 55 points. I'm not exactly going to put you on top of the world beaters list, right?
Well,
but they still are a team that's 3-1.
But it's 55 points to the Buccaneers.
Right. Right, to the Buccaneers.
That's the other thing, too. I mean, it's not giving up 55 points to, say, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers or, Patrick Mahomes, an elite quarterback. We're talking Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Who just last week where we were questioning, does he even deserve to be in the league anymore?
Exactly. And he's basically playing for a long-term gig.
Yeah,
with the Buccaneers. He hasn't even earned it yet. There's still a, is he the guy going forward for this franchise kind of situation, right? Where he could have locked that up 3 years ago, right? 2 years ago, he could have locked that up where Buck fans were like, nope, this is definitely the guy. This is the guy you lock up. This is the guy you get, like Dak Prescott. This is the guy we want going forward, right? Instead, it's, I don't know, we'll see. This is the year he's got to play for the money. Right, that's the quarterback that's going to light you up if you're the Rams. So there's just, and that's, and listen, if you're the league, that's exactly what you want. That's exactly what you want. You want every fan base. You want what happened last night in Pittsburgh, right? We're an 0-3 football team that's got a lot of question marks, wins a game, and all of a sudden it's, they're not done yet. Don't bury them yet. I mean, don't ignore all these statistics and say 1-3 teams haven't gone, only 7 of them have gone to the playoffs in the last 10 years. No 0-4 team has gone to the playoffs in the last 10, 15 years, right? You don't ignore those. If the league gives you a more parodied, kind of league, a more parody situation, you take it because that's what you want. Yes, the Broncos season is pretty much done, right? Yes, some of these 0-4 teams are terrible. Miami doesn't want to win any games, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, if you got a few wins, but you got a few problems, hey, you know what? A lot of teams have a few wins and have got a few problems. So you're not alone. You got issues. Everybody's got issues right now. So, you know, it's a good position for the league to be in. Yes, we want some excellence. So, by the way, before I want to make a note of something we kind of talked about yesterday, just touched on it with the London game going at the, oh God, I'm going to butcher it again, Ron, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Did I get that right?
You got it.
I want to make sure I get Tottenham right.
Or you could say New White Hart Lane.
New White Hart Lane. That the stadium that they're playing in.
Yeah.
So
that's the unofficial name of it.
That's unofficial. So I'm kind of excited to see this stadium. I hear it's nice. I hear ticket demand is really high for these games in London. So
Londoners, you know, they'll tune into American TV. And they'll say, look, the Chargers play at a soccer stadium. Look how great the seats are.
Yes, it's fantastic.
That's how they all must look.
You know what? I thought when these London games first started, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. Boy, they really love them. The American football product is still a popular product overseas.
Yep.
It's, you know, it goes there, what? They got three games in London now?
Three games this year.
That's great. One year, there's going to be like 10. They're just going to have every team go out there once.
Yeah. One year, they'll probably have 8.
Yeah.
Because they'll have London Jaguars.
They'll have the London Jaguars. I know. I used to say all the time, there will never be a team there because it just doesn't work. It just doesn't.
Right.
There's so many problems to it. But the more I keep going, boy, it has not diminished. The excitement for the product, tickets are in high demand.
Yeah. The only rub, though, is if the Jaguars were to move to London, I'm not willing to share Gardner Minshew.
No, not at all.
Not with London, because he would take London by storm.
Yeah, I don't need to see him by the guards at the castle.
Oh, you kidding me? He'd be taking selfies with the Queen.
Exactly. He'd be next. I mean, I don't want to see him doing. I don't want to see him become the next super popular British export.
He would be knighted. He yep. would be wedded to a princess in a heartbeat. I mean, he would take over America or
That's
take
right.
over England.
That's right. Paul McCartney would want to meet him.
Of course.
Right? All these great English athletes and entertainers would just be lining up to be part of the Gardner Minshew mania. Yeah, we don't necessarily want to give them that.
He would probably woo all 5 Spice Girls.
That's true.
At the
Absolutely.
Same time.
At the same time, he would. Of course he would. Gardner Minshew. I saw a great tweet about that. I saw it. It had a picture of Peyton Manning, meaning yep. Gardner Minshew. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It said one legend meaning it was something.
And it was just, great. It was like I think it said it was great to meet your heroes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, you know,
must have been Manning. Nice for Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Must have been. We love Gardner Minshew. He's our new guy.
Yeah. I've never seen a quarterback. I don't remember a time where a quarterback has taken. A league by this much, or
I no kidding, right?
I mean, it's just like this legend, and then he backs it up on the field.
Yep,
you know, I mean, that game against the Broncos. I mean, albeit I know it's against the Broncos, but some of those scrambles he had, especially that one where it was, I mean, he was down for the count, and he comes popping up out of nowhere and throws a touchdown pass. It's like this is why we have Minshew mania. He's rewriting. It's kind of like Patrick Mahomes last year.
Very much like Patrick Mahomes last year, where you started realizing, oh, this isn't a fluke. This guy's like got some skills. Like
yeah.
He can really play in this league. He is like, I think the 6 touchdown performance he had in week 2 last year made me go, okay, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
This guy can really play. This guy.
Imagine like, he ain't going if away. Minshew gets 6.
Oh, when are we going to start seeing him in commercials, national commercials?
Oh, they're already filmed.
Start writing them.
They're still editing.
All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with 2 N's. Your thoughts as week 4 is now in the books. Week 5 coming up this weekend as we continue on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The Sacramento Kings are going to India to play a couple of preseason games this upcoming weekend. They're going to be in Mumbai, and they are using Drake's private 747.
What are you helping out an American team for?
I don't understand. Why is Drake doing this? Isn't he all about Toronto Raptors and Canada?
Yeah. What happens when the Kings and the Raptors face off in the NBA Finals next year?
That's right. And the Kings can say, well, we used Drake's plane when we went all the way out to India for a 20-hour trip.
We're buddies.
So the Kings owner, who's an Indian-American, has booked these games out in India, which is pretty cool. It's great. Expand the brand of the NBA across the globe. So they're going to be playing the Pacers in Mumbai on Friday and Saturday. So this huge plane, and this isn't a private jet per se. This is like a private set. Oh, it's a 767. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. And it's all decked out in couches and luxury seats. And it's just a big old flying in style. But here's the thing. Drake, it's Drake's plane. It's a $20 million plane. It's Drake's plane. But it's not really. He just gets to use it whenever he wants for free because Cargojet, who makes it, a Canadian company, thinks the advertising helps the business if Air Drake is on the outside, if Drake's name is associated with the plane. So they want Drake to, you know, hey, Instagram this baby, take pictures of you in the plane, all of that. And that's good advertising for us. So you get to use this massive jet whenever you travel.
So he's only taking the Kings?
Yeah, so the yeah, exactly.
What are the Pacers taking?
They're probably flying coach.
They're probably flying that plane from Indiana Jones.
Right.
Needs to make several stops along the way.
Sacramento Kings going out in style, baby. Unbelievable.